Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Jeff Lagerman.
Hey, welcome in everybody. Happy Tuesday. Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lay and Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Jaguars Today live at Everbank. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Lagerman, Fat Tony here with you. Jeff and Tony, that was, of course, the sound from the last time the Jags were in the postseason in 2007. And it didn't go well, as well as they would have liked on Sunday, Jeff, to help them in that regard. But right now, as Tony and I talked about yesterday, just win your game this week. That's all you can do. And if you win enough of your remaining games, I think good things will happen for you. I don't think Indy and Houston are winning out. All right. So, you know, just go beat San Diego. Leave yourself in good position. That's all you can take care of this
week. I was glad that Indianapolis and Houston won.
Were you?
Yeah.
You're a bad person.
Well, no, and I'm not saying that because it's negative for the Jaguars. The reason I say that is that I want this team to continue
to earn it.
To earn it and fight and scratch and claw and not have, I guess you could say, the pressure of, oh my gosh, we got a share of the first place lead. Let's go ahead and let's go. We got to go now. No, just keep playing. Just keep doing what you're doing. Keep getting better as a team. And I think that's where the focus needs to be, and that's where it should be.
Well, look, you look at Indy and Houston taking advantage of opportunities. They're playing with backup quarterbacks. You've got your guy. You're healthier on offense. You know, I understand Brandon Linder's done for the year, but overall, you're healthier on offense than at any point you've been this season right now. You've got all the weapons around Blake Bortles. Go out and beat a bad San Diego team, a beat-up San Diego team without their top couple of receivers. Their offensive line has been just a mess.
Yeah, they're not very good up front. Not very good up front. They can't run the ball. You know, as I mentioned with Dan, they got a first-round draft pick running back.
What have you seen from him on tape? Because obviously it hasn't clicked. Is it him? Is it the blocking?
Is that what it is? Yeah, it's not very good.
Yeah.
I watched their last two games so far, and Melvin Gordon is – I remember watching him coming out of college. You know, you watch, you know, Gurley and you watch Gordon, TJ Yeldon, watch all those guys. And Melvin Gordon was by far the most electric when he got in the open field. I mean, he was special when he got in the open field. And I think his longest run this year might be low 20s, something like that. And he hasn't even gotten into the open field where he can display what he has,
right,
you know, which is kind of shocking because you would think that somewhere along the line he would find a little bit of wiggle room. I don't know if they're necessarily running him the best way that he did, you know, in college, a little kind of a different feel to it, and I think he's still kind of adjusting and learning what they're asking him to do and where he needs to go. But he's still showing a little bit of signs that kind of at certain moments he's hard to get down, and he's very close to breaking some big long runs, and that's going to be a challenge for the Jaguars because he's not a runner that you would think that runs with power like a Todd Gurley. That seems like a real powerful runner that can run through things, but he has the knack and the ability to have great balance running through certain tackles without power but with balance. And if he ends up keeping his feet on a couple of the ones in the last two games that I saw, all of a sudden he could be off to the races with him.
We'll talk primarily today about looking back at what you saw in the film in the Jags' Thursday night win over Tennessee. But just, while we're on San Diego right here, you know, it's you look at Baltimore, and Baltimore's able to move the football using a variety of tight ends against the Jags. They were down to not much at the wide receiver position, at least not any household name. So, you know, Phillip Rivers, Joe Flacco, I'd probably personally give the edge to Rivers, but they're at least comparable. You have Antonio Gates and Ladarius Green there. You have a very good pass catching back and Danny Woodhead out of the backfield. You know, I don't think the Jags are going to overlook this team, but I don't think we should just look at San Diego and say, boy, they're this beat up that this should be a game the Jags should handle easily.
No, this is even though Phillip is missing a lot of his outside guys, you know, his core. You know, Danny Woodhead is, I mean, what, 110 touches he's got on the season, probably almost like 50-50 as far as passes caught and also runs. I think it's like 46 and 64, 64 catches. 64 catches for a running back is crazy. You got Antonio Gates, you got Ladarius Green, two very good tight ends. Ladarius Green is getting just as much play time as Antonio Gates, who's slowing down a little bit. And then Stevie Johnson, who was considered a number one wide receiver in Buffalo for many years. Now, he doesn't always run great routes, and I think Phillip Rivers is learning how to trust him. He's kind of unconventional the way he runs certain things. But it's not like it's not like that Phillip doesn't have weapons to throw to.
Right. He's been a guy who's been a 1,300-yard receiver.
Yeah. I mean, he's got some weapons that he can throw to. And he is, I think, different than Joe Flacco in that he trusts the short and intermediate stuff more than Joe Flacco does. Joe likes to throw the deep ball a little bit more. And Phillip Rivers is a more move-the-change type of guy. Gets the ball out incredibly fast, which Joe Flacco doesn't do that as well. I think the numbers on Phillip Rivers are that he's the second fastest quarterback in the National Football League at getting the ball out. That's how good he is. And he's got that funky throwing motion. It's
right.
Kind of like a shot put.
Yeah.
You know, but it's real quick. And that's going to be hard to get to Phillip Rivers now. It's not something that you're going to be able to say, hey, look, we're going to sack the crap out of him. That's not going to happen.
So would this be a week where, look, this is a team that we've talked about it all year, can't get a lot of pressure with that front four, have had to blitz when they're going to get pressure. It's a bad offensive line for San Diego. Is this a week where you just basically send your four and try to play coverage behind it?
Yeah, I think this is a week you play more four-man, and then you play coverage just because Phillip is so good at taking what their teams are going to give you, to be able to play a little bit more tighter coverage underneath zone, because that's the primary area where he's throwing the deep stuff is not so much an option with him right now. So I would be surprised. I mean, you're still going to dial up blitzes every now and again just because that's what you want to show, but not at the rate that you have been doing the last couple weeks.
How did the Jags do when they sent extra pressure on Thursday night?
That was pretty good. I mean, it was pretty good. I think it was more effective in the mind of Marcus Mariota than it was actually watching it.
Well, and that works too.
And that's good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's okay sometimes, because Mariota threw some balls quick to where if he just hung in the pocket and continued to look down the field, he had some things down the field. So, I mean, that's typical of a young quarterback. Very typical.
Talking with John Osier yesterday, he feels watching the tape as well that one of the things that Blake is struggling with a little bit is leaving the pocket early, that maybe he is sensing the pressure, and that could be just because at times the offensive line hasn't held up. Have you seen that? Has that come through on tape to you that he is leaving a clean pocket?
I think John is right. I think the one thing, though, that makes you feel better about it with Blake as opposed to a comparison to Blaine Gabbert is that when Blake leaves the pocket, his eyes don't ever drop when he leaves the pocket. He just feels something that is not there sometimes and then escapes, but his eyes continue to stay down the field, whereas other quarterbacks, their eyes drop, and then they start looking here, and then once all of a sudden they're looking here, they can't look where they need to be looking, which is the progression and what's happening down the field. So, I mean, that's a positive for Blake in that the eyes aren't dropping.
Is he missing too many guys? I mean, when you watch film of quarterbacks, and Tony and I were talking about this yesterday, I imagine every quarterback misses open receivers from time to time.
Sure.
Right? I mean, it's just the way it is. You can't see everything in the limited amount of time when you're trying to get rid of the football. But is it just in your film study, is Blake missing too many guys that you think he should be seeing in his progression?
No, I think he's missing guys that I think is typical. When I say typical, what's typical? A middle of the road quarterback, probably somewhere in there. But the one thing I think that makes you excited about Blake is that even though at times he can play poorly, he just seems to have the knack that he can just turn it on at certain times and overcome poor stretches. And there's a lot of quarterbacks that just can't do that. If they're bad, they're bad. If Blake is bad, he has the ability to be good for a couple drives. And that's encouraging because a lot of quarterbacks, once they get into that slump, they can't get out of that slump. And Blake has the ability to sometimes just all of a sudden one series maybe not be good. And then the next series, all of a sudden you're like, wow, where did that come from? So, I mean, that's all positive.
All right, we will talk a lot about Blake's performance in the Jags overall. Jeff Logman, after a little film study and a long weekend off, I imagine you might have been trying to rustle up an animal or two out there.
You probably guessed right.
You can get on board today with Jeff and the crew at 641-1010. That's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Today's question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. Pretty simple and straightforward. You look at the six games remaining for the Jags. At at home against San Diego, on the road against the Titans, then they're at home against Indianapolis and Atlanta, and then they go to the Saints and the Texans to close out the season. So out of those six games, how many and which ones do you expect the Jaguars to win down the stretch? And you add that to the 4-6 mark, and you get their win total on the season. And can they go 4-2 and get to 500? Can they do better than that? You think they'll come up short of that? Whatever your expectations are, share your thoughts with us. Not only how many they'll win, but which of the remaining six you have circled as prospective Jaguar victories down the stretch here. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jeff Logman here with you. Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. You can get on board on the tweets at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at Logs 56, LOGS56. And hop on board. And of course, the Jaguars Today Facebook page is open for business as well. We'll open up the phone lines to you when we return in a moment. It's Jaguars Today live at Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Lagerman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And from the always accurate at Bortles Facts, Blake Bortles Facts on Twitter, Blake has never lost a game following a Bold Rush victory on a Thursday night football. So, yet to lose a game in that circumstance.
It's a fact.
I think that streak will continue this Sunday without a loss. Pick up a W for the Jags. Can you imagine 3 in a row, 4 out of 5? All of a sudden they're rolling. I thought Dan Hicken asked a very pertinent question, Jeff. You know, you watch on film how much better, and you said the defense has been the noticeable thing. But, you know, we've seen so many games that could go either way all season long, right? And you really wonder, it comes down to a couple of plays in each game, and certainly the plays at the end are highlighted more, but you know, they could have easily lost these recent games and won the previous ones
sure.
they played this year. And I don't know if it would have taken much more than a play or two here or there in all of those games to
flip the outcome. Well, it would have taken a kick, right?
Right, I mean, one kick, know, either one of the two kicks that was in the air just goes in, and then that's the obvious one right there.
Yeah, no, that's kind of how it is, you know, and it's crazy to think that way, and then sometimes it's hard to really grasp how the NFL is sometimes, and that, you know, there's very few teams that are like the Patriots for the most part, and even the Patriots last night. I mean, them against the Jets, you know, it came down to one play here, one play there. You know, it was, what, a 7-point game. You know, and watching that game early on, you got the impression that if Buffalo makes those plays, they're going to win that game. So
right.
That's kind of how it is, you know. And fortunately, the Jaguars over the last couple weeks, the defense has really risen to the occasion, and there's a couple guys I think you got to point out that have really emerged. I mean, Telvin Smith has been really good since London. He really has risen. I think one of the reasons that he has risen is the play of Roy Miller and Jared Odrick. I mean, how many times do you see Telvin Smith just running? You know, and Telvin's a small guy, you know, so for him to be running
means he doesn't have to get off blocks.
That means he's clean.
Right, exactly.
You know, Roy Miller had, you know, he's been really good like the last 2-3 weeks, but I mean, this past game, he was a monster. You know, he beat up the center for the Tennessee Titans, which, you know, is a late round draft pick from Boston College that was playing for the injured Brian Schwenke. He kicked his butt. And then Avery Jones did the same thing. And that's, you know, when you got a matchup like that, you got to take advantage of it. And Roy certainly did that. Odrick has really, I think, shown up the last 2 weeks. He's had 2 weeks where he's been really consistent, and if there was ever a week and a time that you needed Odrick to step up, it was now because of the injury with Sendarek Marks. Now he's going to be filling some of that role, and it's the role that I wanted them to have him fill at the beginning. You know, I wanted to see Odrick as a three. I thought that at the beginning of the year, and I told you guys this, that I thought that since Tyson played so well last year at that 4B technique and had his probably his best year as a Jaguar, best year as a pro, that it would have been nice to keep Odrick at the three until you got Sendarek Marks back. And then at that point, then you could maybe consider moving Odrick, but you could still maybe even rotate him in. But now that he's got to play that, I think he's emerged a little bit. He's had some flash plays. So that's a real positive for this football team because they're going to need him going forward. And if there was ever a week that Odrick could really play well, this week against the San Diego Chargers would be it. They're not very good up front. So very encouraging, very encouraging. I think the guys at the Leo position are still delinquent in pass rush, but they're playing the run better. Both Clem and Andre Branch both playing the run pretty well. You still want to get more out of them as a pass rusher, though. You know, so then hopefully that can get a little bit better. But do you expect it to be a whole lot better?
No, but we'll take it. We'll take what we can get when we can get it. You know, if Brancher wants to close out a few more victories with a sack on the final play, we'd be all for
that. Yeah, you know, and look, I Andre had a nice game. He had a good hit on Mariota that Mariota was very slow to get up from. The play at the end of the ball game there was kind of a cleanup sack. You know, it's not like he beat anybody and made a big play. But, I mean, here's the thing that I like about Andre Branch. And I've always said this, that he's not a guy that makes the plays himself. Somebody has to make something happen for him to make plays, and that's okay. Sometimes you have that. But what I like about Andre is that he plays with great effort, and he's always going 100 miles an hour, and he's a fast player, so that's good. You know, it's a good role for him. Wish he played with a little bit more knee bend. Wish he played a little bit lower at times when he passed rush, but he is what he is.
All right, let's get to the phones for the first time today. 641-1010 is the phone number. It's also the number for the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. We'll check in on that coming up shortly as well. If you want to send your thoughts via text, you're welcome to do that. You can always tweet the program as well. You know the various Twitter handles by now. Michael in Orange Park going to lead us off this morning. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Morning, gentlemen. Just like to say, first off, I love the show, and second off, I love the way the defense is going, and without knowing everything that happened, I was hoping you guys could shed some light on Quentin Coakles, and now that he's on the waiver wire, is it worth looking at from a Jacksonville standpoint?
I think it's absolutely worth kicking the tires, you know, absolutely. I mean, he's a former first-round pick. He was a hand-on-the-ground type of guy at North Carolina. This transition for him to go to a 3-4 defense, I think, was a little different. The one thing I will say, he definitely has the ability to rush the passer at times, but when you watch Quentin Coakles on film, sometimes he looks like he's an old man. You know, he doesn't have that snap, doesn't play a lot of times with a sense of urgency, but you know, the talent is there. I mean, Quentin Coakles, I think, was a consensus high pick, you know, and you have a consensus high pick like that, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be looking at him.
So when
but
you
he
say,
could provide maybe a boost in pass rush.
Excuse me. When you say playing like an old man, is that an effort thing or is he a stiff athlete?
Great question.
You know, hard to tell,
yeah,
right?
It's hard to tell, you know, because unless you know the guy and you've been around him a lot, you know, it's kind of hard to tell. But, you know, when you watch him, he does kind of look like he plays like an old man, you know. But there are certain guys that kind of play like that. I mean, Clyde Simmons played like an old man because he was just sneaky. You know, he's sneaky strong, and he was able to be effective kind of playing that way. So it's not necessarily a negative connotation so much as it is just a style of play. But I would like to see Quentin Coakles play the way that he did at UNC, where his hand is on the ground and he's going right away instead of standing up in a two-point stance. Maybe sometimes guys aren't scheme fits. You know, maybe the scheme here would fit him, and that's something that Dave Caldwell and Gus Bradley have to take a look at.
I'm a little bit intrigued by Quanterris Smith, who they just picked up. We were talking on a break about him. He was a 2013 draft pick of Denver, had torn his ACL in college, and they tried
Western Kentucky.
Yes, yeah. Tried to bring him along slowly. He went on IR his first year, and then a knee injury put him on IR for another season. Ultimately, got released. Jets had him for a little while, and so he's still a young guy with some pass rush ability. I remember going back, Jeff, that they were really thinking that he could develop into something in Denver, and I guess, you know, never able to stay healthy for a significant period of time, but the Jags picked him up because they had an open spot on the practice squad after Craig Lowstein got promoted last week onto the active roster. So, you know, they're obviously going to spend some of these last 6 weeks mining the waiver wire. I'm sure, which they do every week, but you're really
waiver
trying to
wire
find,
and
find some pass rush right
and
now.
Other teams' practice squad.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, that's what you got to take a look at. And in order to, you know, here's the thing: when you commit to a guy who is on another team's practice squad, the first thing you look at in the evaluation process is where are they at with their roster. You know, the Jets, I think, are a perfect example of what I'm talking about, in that they're very deep along the defensive line. So your first impression is, okay, let's go and look and see what a good team at that position has on their front line. And let's take a look at their practice squad, because maybe they've got a guy hidden on practice squad because they're just too good to be able to bring him up on the active roster. So if you can mine the opposing teams or the rest of the league's practice squads, you have to commit to that guy to be on your active roster for a minimum amount of time, which I think is 3 weeks.
I think you're right.
So, and you have to have a roster spot that's open. So that's kind of one of the things that you're in a little bit of a quandary. Do you have the flexibility with your own roster from a health standpoint to be able to add somebody at a position like that without messing up your game day 45? You know, so those are the things that they definitely need to look at. Now, Quentin Copels is a guy that you got to take a look at. You know, he's a position of value, you know, because he would be that Leo type guy. And it's a position that the Jaguars addressed in the draft with Dante Fowler, but, you know, Dante's hurt. But in my opinion, Dante Fowler is not enough to address the position. You still have to find more guys that can fill that role, not just from a Leo standpoint, but from a hand-in-the-ground outside pass rushing standpoint going forward.
Michael, good call, because I have heard that question come up since, you know, to me several times on Twitter since the release of Copel. So.
Well, and he's still on his rookie deal, I think, if I remember right. Isn't he on his rookie deal, or will he be on his second deal?
He might be on his second deal.
You know, so if you claim him on waivers, you assume his contract. So that's something to be considered as well. Now the Jaguars are you know, great as far as cap situation goes.
Right. But at the same time, you don't want to overpay for a guy, you know, at all.
And you also want to see what kind of a fit he is from a locker room standpoint. Is he a good guy? Is he a, you know, character question guy? You know, when you start playing well, you start being, you know, when you feel like where you're at with the Jaguars, where you're building, you're getting better, you're feeling good about where you're at, you got to be careful at this juncture to where you don't interrupt chemistry, you know, because chemistry is a big thing.
Let me see here. 2000, yeah, he's on the hook. I don't think anybody's going to claim him. He's on the hook for $7.8 million next year.
That's a lot of money.
So that, I guess that.
But here's the thing. If you take a look at him and you get him on your roster, one, he's going to finish the year out and you're not paying him a ton of money because the bulk of everything is probably already done. You know, the signing bonuses have been paid. You're paying a fraction of what his paragraph 5 salary is for this year. And then, you know what? It's like a test drive. If you like what you see, okay, then you keep him. If you don't like what you see, you have two options. One, you cut him, you know, and let him go. Or number two is that you say, look, you're not worth $7.8 million. We'd like to keep you at this number.
Right.
And so
and here's how you would fit in, and you'd have a little.
It's kind of cheating your way up to the front of the line to get in the door on Black Friday.
Sure.
Right?
As long as you're willing to pay him what he's got left on his deal this year, which is not exorbitant.
Yeah. So it's not, you know, it might be, you know, a risk worth taking.
We'll find out if anyone does put in the waiver claim for Quentin Copels. Thank you for the call again, Michael. Let's go to Seth on the north side next up here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Seth. How are you?
Hey, guys. I'm doing good. How you guys doing?
Great, thanks. What's up?
I was just wanted to comment, man. You know, we've clearly improved on the offensive side of the ball with our ability to move the ball downfield, but when we get inside, you know, the red zone, the 20-yard line, we tend to lack a certain creativity. You know, we get within the 10 and it's like, okay, let's put a defensive tackle at fullback, put two tight ends in, and just try to pound it in. Like, I'm just wondering, why aren't we getting the type of creativity that we need in order to get the ball in without running it?
Well, I think, you know, I understand kind of what the perspective is because the Jaguars have not been great in the red zone. I mean, 0-for-3 prior to the Julius Thomas play in which they scored. And historically, the Jaguars going into that game were, you know, less than 50% touchdown ratio, which is near the bottom of the league. You want to have that be better. You know, but as far as creativity goes, look, there's not a ton of plays that teams run. I'm not a big fan of running on three consecutive downs. What do they do that from the six?
From the seven. He got 5 yards
line,
on first
Denard
down.
Robinson.
And by the way, just to interrupt you for a second, the way that Gus kind of the way that's been explained is they were trying to hurry up because they didn't want a play to get reviewed, right? So they get
Which
up
was
there.
Was a very smart decision because I don't think that was a catch. That ball was caught.
Okay, so they hurry up. They give it to Denard. He picks up 5. They're thinking, all right, we think we got a good matchup on, you know, man on man here that we can run to the same spot. Then he gets stuffed on second down. That's the one to me at that point. Okay, it's third down at the 2 yard line. I didn't mind. All right, you just gave him a 5 yard pop. Run him again to the same spot. See if you can get the same kind of push. He scores a touchdown if you do. Then you get the third down. That's the one I think that a lot of people probably had the issue with.
Yeah, they have the issue because it doesn't work.
Right. Well, right, true. But obviously, if Denard had popped it in, they wouldn't have been as much of an issue.
Right.
But,
you know,
but you know what I mean.
No, I get it because you know what? You know, and I think part of that is like we've all been kind of waiting for Julius Thomas to emerge. You know, and then we know that Allen Robinson can jump through the roof like he did on the one play right before the interception to Zach Brown. So you're like, okay, where's that at? You know, and then you have the fade. I mean, you sit there and you watch this football team work the fade constantly in practice. You watch them throw the fade, back shoulder and over the top fade in the corner of the end zone before in pregame warm-up. They do that every week, and it looks so good in pregame warm-up, but yet when they do it in the game, it's not happening. You know, but I think it's something that, I mean, that has to be a staple of what you do when you have athletes like Julius Thomas and like Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns to where it becomes something that you make it successful. And I think that they will make it successful at some point. But Julius is a big part of that red zone. He has to emerge. The chemistry has to be better between him and Blake. And I think it's starting to show a little bit. It showed a little bit early in that game against Tennessee, and it certainly showed at the 5 yard line, but that was a great matchup.
They wanted to make a point, I thought, early to get the ball to Julius, whether to make a point to everyone or just let's just get him going, right?
Yeah, I think it might be not so much a point to the team or the fan base. I think it's more of a point, hey, look, we've been trying to get Julius involved and it hasn't been working, but we haven't gotten him the ball early. Let's get him involved early,
exactly.
And then all of a sudden maybe things just start to click, you know?
Right.
And whether it was intentional or not, but Blake was definitely looking his way early in that ballgame.
And when you talk about the matchup at the goal line, Derek Morgan, he's not going to be able to cover Thomas. But
yeah.
Tony and I mentioned this on Monday. I thought one of the last Friday it was, I thought it was such a savvy play by Julius Thomas. He basically pushes off without ever extending his arm. He just dipped his shoulder right into Derek Morgan and got him off balance for just a split second, turned to the outside, and he got 2 yards of separation. And it was such a savvy little move.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And that to me is, you know, that's something that Julius Thomas probably didn't come into the league necessarily knowing how to do, but he's picked up over the years. And, you know, he's got those kind of abilities. Let's utilize them more.
Yeah, and I think that he got away with a little bit there because he did extend that arm just a little bit.
You think
bit.
So, did
yeah.
he? Okay, because on the angle you see from behind, you can't really see that, right? And he dips in, so maybe he did get the arm out. I couldn't tell from the angle I saw from behind.
The guy that calls that is the guy in the back of the end zone. He's the one that watches the slot tight end.
Right, but now is his view blocked by Morgan's body on that play? So there you go.
So, I mean, it's as a slot guy or a tight end, you have to be aware of where the guy's at that could call that. If the guy on the side and Julius was all alone, then it becomes two other officials that could call that, which is the guy in the back corner of the end zone, the guy also the side judge. And so from that view, which was the all 22 look, you could see that Julius kind of extended that arm a little bit.
Well, I thought it was regardless a savvy move because it didn't make it blatantly obvious.
Didn't
you know, when
called.
You're watching it didn't get called, but I think it didn't get called because of how crafty he was in executing that move. All right, we got to take a timeout. Seth, thank you for the call as well. If you'd like to get on board, the phone lines remain open to you at 641-1010. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony here with you on a Tuesday, brought to you by the law offices of Kenny Lay & Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Loggeman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, we continue along Jaguars Today this morning on a Tuesday, brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony here with you. 641-1010, the phone number. It's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, which we will get to coming up here shortly. Jeff, let's continue to look back at the performance of the Jaguars against the Tennessee Titans and just really the overall performance of Blake Bortles week to week. Compare that to the victory and the prior week against Baltimore, where I thought he had his worst game of the season. I thought he took a step in the right direction. Still wasn't a great game for him. How much better, if at all, do you think he played from a week, what would that be, week 10 to week 11?
I think he got a little bit better because I think at Baltimore, I was like, wow, you know, he could have had three picks in that ball game.
Three or four.
You know, and very fortunate to be able to come out with a victory in that because, I mean, offensively, the Baltimore defense is just not, they're not great, you know. And the secondary, I thought that they would be able to take advantage of them, but they really didn't connect a ton on the deep ball, which I thought that was going to kind of be there for the taking. You know, and in this game, I thought that the wide receivers really helped Blake out in some instances. I mean, the 50-50 ball that was thrown up that Allen Robinson goes up and makes the catch, the sideline catch that they hurried up to kind of prohibit a review and a challenge flag by Mike Mularkey, I think was a key catch. Julius Thomas making the catch in the end zone. He was kind of on top of him quick. So, I mean that's kind of sometimes that how it has to be, and that the receivers, et cetera, need to make the play sometimes that are above and beyond what they would normally expect out of them. But, here's the thing, and I mentioned this earlier. You know, and I'm making notes also for some of this pregame stuff that we do with the coach, and that, you know, the offense really hasn't found its rhythm. The red zone production hasn't been good. But, you know, how good is it to actually say that? I mean, to know that this offense is capable of playing at a higher level. They're capable, one, of being more effective running the football. They're capable of protecting the passer better. They're capable of trusting the protection better. They're capable of making more plays down the field on a consistent basis. But, you know, if you go back and you look at the last number of years, how many times could we say that about this offense, that we know that they're capable of more? You know, and that's a real positive thing. This offense just needs to find a little bit of a rhythm. And I think part of finding that rhythm is a more effective running game because, you know, TJ over the last couple games, he's been solid, but, you know, it really hasn't been a factor.
Well, this is perfect because we've got some questions about some of these offensive skill guys coming in on the text line right now. By the way, Tony and I were looking at Allen Robinson's numbers yesterday. Whether he gets voted in or not, right now, give him the edge over Hearns on the overall numbers. He's got a solid case for the Pro Bowl this year. And now Hearns is on the periphery of that as well. And one big game this week could put him right back in the same level of conversation. Mm-hmm. But with that in mind, here's some texts coming in on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. These first two are from the same phone number, same person sending in, starting with your opinion, if you agree with the premise or not. Why don't the Jags give Allen Robinson a chance on those 50-50 balls in the red zone? Something you brought up earlier.
They tried. I mean, they tried. It just hasn't happened.
Haven't connected enough.
Yeah, the one play, I think, earlier when they failed on a red zone opportunity, Allen Robinson was to the left side all alone, and Blake had a combination route on the right side and looked to the right side, whereas you wish kind of that he started out, saw that he had one-on-one, and said, you know what, I know I've got a combination route over here, but I also got Allen Robinson over there in one-on-one.
Right, he should win that.
And giving him an opportunity, but it didn't happen. You know, but, I mean, Allen Robinson, here's the thing about Allen. You know, last year when you watched him play, and then even earlier this year when he had a 50-50 ball, he was catching some of them and then falling to the ground. And what are we seeing now? We're seeing him go up, dominate the ball, and then be athletic, and then hit the ground on his feet and still go.
Well, that was one of the best, I thought, plays he made all year, that one they threw up between double coverage, because he was able to elevate and pluck it with his hands. It was high, so high that he couldn't let it get to his body, right? He had to pluck it, and right after it gets to his hands, it gets drilled from behind. The ball never moved.
No.
So I thought that was a great example of what he's capable
confident
of doing when he trusts his hands.
Confident. I mean, that's when you watch him play now, to watch him to where he was at earlier in the year and then last year, confidence, and you could see that when he goes out there on the field, he expects to dominate, and that's as a player, that's where you want to be.
All right, this from the same person, and whether you agree with this premise or not, I'll throw the question to you. Why do the Jags treat Allen Hearns as a complimentary wide receiver?
Well, I think that's what he is. You know, and I don't know, that's not to be negative. I mean, Keenan McCardell was a complimentary wide receiver. You know, the big plays were to Jimmy. And so you look to Jimmy, and if Jimmy's not there because Jimmy's a chunk gain, then you go and you find Allen.
Here's the thing I'll say about that. Allen Hearns just had a streak of how many consecutive games with a touchdown?
Like six.
Right. Yeah. With six or seven. Whatever. I mean, it's so he had one quiet game, right? I mean, is that a complimentary receiver? I look at a guy that gets brought up a lot this season because a lot of people wanted the Jags to draft him, Amari Cooper. He had four balls thrown to him. He caught one for 4 yards this week. Is he a complimentary receiver all of a sudden in Oakland? Or did he just get covered well in that game by Darius Slay of Detroit and they opted to look in other directions?
Yeah, I consider, you know, and what's the definition of complimentary? I mean, that's kind of what you got to identify.
I guess if you're a true alpha wide receiver, you're going to get your targets regardless. But how many of those guys are there? I mean, there are the Julio Jones of the world that are going to get 15 balls thrown to him regardless of who's on him anytime. Mm-hmm. Alan Hearns is not in the Julio
Jones category.
That's
not his category.
I understand that. So I don't know if that's what they're saying. You know, look at the productivity. We should be forcing the ball to him X number of times a game regardless. I thought it was interesting because, guys, we didn't see any wide receiver targets really other than Brian Walters, right, for the first quarter plus. Right, most of the first half of that football game. That was. What do you think that was? Do you think they saw something? Was it an effort to get Julius Thomas going, or they saw something else that they thought would be able to be successful with?
I was very surprised. I mean, because the Tennessee Titans, I think, were on their fifth or sixth consecutive week with a different cornerback combination.
Which is a credit to them because they ranked very highly overall on pass defense. I think they were third in the league in yards given up through the air, and they had a lot of guys shuffle in and out of that back end of the line.
Yeah, they've done a good job with what they've had to deal with. But, you know, I just don't want people to get the impression that I'm being negative or critical of Allen Hurns by saying complimentary. I mean, complimentary, there's a lot of great complimentary wide receivers in the National Football.
Sure.
You know, I mean, Jerry Rice and John Taylor. What was John Taylor? Was John Taylor a complimentary wide receiver to Jerry Rice? Probably so.
Absolutely.
John Taylor was a great wide receiver.
Well, we're looking at Randall Cobb here, who's put up some big numbers in the last few years.
Complimentary wide receiver to Jordy Nelson, right?
With Jordy Nelson gone, Randall Cobb has not been able to handle the rolled coverage as much as he's had in the past. So, you know,
there's nothing wrong with being a great complimentary wide receiver. And I think Allen Robinson is an outstanding player. But, you know, when you watch a guy who you wouldn't even think about calling complimentary, he has something special. You know, he has an ability to do things just the way he runs, the way he catches, the way he can dominate a ball. You know, like Dez Bryant, the way he dominates the ball, the way he dominates play, the way the wide receiver in Pittsburgh, Antonio Brown. I mean, he's not a complimentary wide receiver. He's a dominant trait player. Is Allen Hurns in that category? No, but he's an excellent player, and there's nothing wrong with
that. There might be a dozen of those guys
in the
league.
Yeah, there's not many of them.
Right.
There's not many of them.
This one from Darren and Duval, again, on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, says, question for Jeff, how healthy do you think Denard Robinson is? I think he adds pass and running game, change-up dynamic. Shouldn't he get more touches? Not saying on third and one. Give those to Yeldon. I'd like to hear your thoughts about Denard. That's from Darren.
Well, I think prior to this pass game against Tennessee, Denard hasn't earned the right to get more touches because, you know, every time that Denard has kind of touched the ball prior to the Tennessee game, it's just been kind of you know. Oh, and boy, hey, Denard got a ball. Well, yeah, he didn't really do anything with it. But you saw that explosion out of Denard, two carries that he had in that ball game, and it made you go, wow, that's the guy that we saw in the preseason prior to the knee injury. So when you start to have plays like that, then I think Greg Olsen starts to think in his mind, well,
he's getting back to himself.
Back. Yeah. He's back. Now we can go ahead and get him some touches because he's showing us that he can do something with it when he gets it.
All right, this one, and we'll just wrap up for now on the text line from the 904 area code. I think the Jags are on the verge of breaking out. If we don't go to the playoffs this year, do you think we have a real chance next year? Look, we got six games left to play this year, and they're meaningful games as of right now. The Jags have meaningful football games ahead of them. But, you know, just for a moment, let's play the look-ahead game, right? And if you have no more wave of injury than any other team, you're going to get some guys hurt. But if your key guys stay healthy next year, and looking at the state of the division, could 2016 be a year where I don't know. I don't want to put into words for you. What do you think is the
playoffs,
ceiling for this team?
I mean, for next year?
Yeah.
Next year, I think playoff.
Should you expect it as a Jaguar fan?
To be in? I think you expect this team next year to compete for a division title. Now, I'm not saying win it, but I think you expect this team to compete for a division title next year. And I think,
which they may do this year, but it's a down year, right? I mean, you're talking more of a conventional challenge for a division title with a typical record that would win a division.
That's right. That's right. And I think this year you expect this team, like we're talking about, to have meaningful games in December. That's a positive thing. And I think next year the expectation is this team to have, without a doubt, meaningful games in December and to compete for a division title next year.
All right. There you go on the Boston's Restaurant Sports Bar text line. We'll get back to more of your thoughts there and on the phone lines as well at 641-1010 coming up. But coming up next, we've got this date in football history. We've got the Honda Drive around the NFL, and we'll get back to your thoughts on Jaguar football. It's Jaguars Today. Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lay and Associates Divorce Men Only. .com. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jeff Lagerman here with you. It's Jaguars Today live at Everbank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. I have a feeling, Tony, I did this one last week, which makes me question the validity of a site that I was getting information from last week. But doesn't this sound familiar? 1957 on this date, Cleveland Brown rookie Jim Brown ran for a then NFL record 237 yards and four touchdowns to lead the Browns to a 45-31 victory over the L.A. Rams. That seems like one that might have been presented last week. It just appears, but this one,
I feel like Jim Brown came up last week. Maybe he set and broke his own record.
Well, he does break a lot of records. That's quite possible. Maybe he did set it at a higher plane on a different date in a later year, but for now, we'll go with what's on NFL.com, 237 at the time. The NFL record. Birthdays for this date include, happy 75th, the former NFL commissioner, Paul Tagliabue, born on this date in 1940. Also born on this date in 1982, the bearded Ryan Fitzpatrick, and 1986, Jimmy Graham. Welcome to the world, Jimmy Graham. Definitely, fantasy owners feel he is very underutilized in the Seattle passing attack this year. Those are your birthdays for November 24th. This date in football brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Try the SomnoMed Custom Fit Snore Guard. Your loved ones are going to thank you. It's a gift for them for this holiday season if you get it for you. 620-9225, located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done or you're just in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 620-9225 or visit jamesjmccall.com to get a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
The Denver Broncos have announced that Brock Osweiler will get the start this week for a still-recovering Peyton Manning, who's dealing with that plantar fascia on one of his feet, an ankle injury, and still those injured ribs. The Broncos play Tom Brady and the now 10-0 New England Patriots. The game is on Sunday Night Football this week in Denver. Osweiler led the Broncos to a win on Sunday in Chicago. The NFL is looking into the St. Louis Rams and how they dealt with a concussion to their quarterback Case Keenum on Sunday. Keenum suffered a concussion on the final series of the game for the Rams, but continued to play the final two plays after suffering the apparent injury. Head coach Jeff Fisher said after the game that he didn't notice Keenum having any trouble getting up after a hit to the head that caused the injury, that he was paying too much attention to the game situation to notice basically what was happening with his quarterback.
Yeah, you got to be kidding me. I mean, anybody can see that and go, somebody needs to go help him off the field,
right,
and help him out. I mean, that was obvious.
Well, and then he turned it over and it was set up Baltimore to go win the game, right?
And that to me, I understand that there's certain guys that, you know, it's very hard to tell through the course of the game, like Zane Beatles. I mean, Zane Beatles, I guess, had concussion symptoms, I guess, after Thursday night's game, right? And you watch the game, you never saw anything kind of show up. And you go and you watch the film, and there was one hit at the end of the ball game where a linebacker comes up, and I can't remember the name of the linebacker. I don't remember if it was Williamson or Woodyard, but, I mean, came up, and, I mean, you could just see the jar hit right to Zane Beatles' head, and you assume that that might be it. But Zane, you know, continues on, you know, finishes the play, goes back to the huddle. But, I mean, with Case Keenum, he's on the ground, and he can't even stand up.
Right.
I mean, how do a coaching staff, a team doctor, a head athletic trainer, and an independent spotter all missed that one. You know, I remember I was, you know, read about it on Monday, I guess, of what had happened. And then finally saw the clip last night. And I'm watching the clip going, you mean to tell me that somebody missed that?
Right.
No excuse.
So are they missing it, or are they willfully, I didn't see anything kind of thing? I mean.
But, I mean, independent spotters should be able to see anything. What was he,
well,
going,
the independent,
was
right.
he in the bathroom?
I don't know.
Was
Jeff,
he having a conversation, shooting the breeze with, you know, guys in the press box?
That's the thing. We see guys get up. We see guys stagger. And, you know, like, how can I mean, everyone in the building knows, especially when it's a quarterback, because the cameras are all focused on the guy.
And the eyes. Everybody's eyes, right?
Right. You would think.
And it was a classic, I mean, if you look at, and I'm not an expert on this, and I haven't seen the numbers, but if you look at the ones, the blows to the head, that are the ones that can cause concussions, the whiplash to where the back of the head hits the turf is probably one of the most jarring ones. That's I had one of them myself.
Which surprised the hell out of me that Delanie Walker was able to get right back on the field.
Yeah, but his didn't snap like Case Keenum, not to that, you know, to where the wham. I mean, it was literally like whiplash, bap, and then.
Well, I thought
back.
He had a pretty good pop to the back of his head, but regardless.
Yeah, I mean, that was, but that type where the body lands on his back and then the head, it just continues on because, you know, the weight of the helmet, the weight of the head, them things right there now, they'll get you.
All right, so that's.
Let me also, the issue that Peyton Manning is dealing with, plantar fasciitis, I had that late in my career. That was by far the most painful one that I had ever had. And it's one of those things where it just doesn't go away. You know, there's different ways that they try to treat it. And there's different levels, I think, in which the plantar fascia can be damaged. It can be strained. It can be partially torn. But the way that they try to rectify that, they try to put orthotics in your shoe to where it takes a lot of the stress off the plantar fascia. They tape your foot to where they have a bunch of different tapes that almost form like a ribbon, you know, like the ribbon tribute ribbons that people wear, whether they be pink or they be yellow for whatever the moment is. They do a ribbon shape where it goes around the heel and it crosses.
Like traction for your foot.
And then they tape it all the way at the ball of your foot. And that try to helps alleviate some of the pressure put on the plantar fasciitis. And then the other thing that you do for that is at nighttime they put you in a boot to keep your ankle flexed at 90 degrees to sleep at night. One of those almost like a walking boot type of thing, but it's just meant to keep your ankle flexed so that your first step in the morning you're not stretching your Achilles and your calf. It's already stretched because otherwise the first step you literally can walk on your tippy toe all the way to use the bathroom first thing in the morning. It's the most painful experience you'll ever have.
Do you think they go back to Peyton Manning if he is now? They can always say he's not 100% healthy, right? So they have that built in. But like Chris Harris, one of their defensive backs, said after the game this week that this is Peyton's team. When he's healthy, he deserves to be back in there. Well, his play doesn't dictate that. His stature in the game may dictate that. But Brock Osweiler, that was the first, you know, game by starting quarterback for Denver in which they didn't throw an interception all season long. You know,
so if Peyton is healthy and can play, you know, somewhat like the Peyton Manning of old, then he deserves to have.
But has he played that way this year?
I think at times he did. The couple games he did.
The one coming out of the bye where he played very well,
played really well
against Green Bay, even though he didn't throw a bunch of touchdowns, his arm strength looked like it was there. But and that was though with, you know, an extra week in the middle of the season to kind of, you know, build himself up or you know. Not have quite as much wear.
You got to kind of see it, you know.
Well,
all of a sudden, it looks like he's.
And when did
back
the foot injury happen for Peyton? It may have been after that too. It may have been in Indianapolis before that foot injury happened. So he may have still been dealing with the ribs and maybe an ankle injury. But I think the plantar fascia was Indianapolis.
I think if Osweiler plays well against New England this weekend, that I'm sticking with that guy.
You know that it's killing Peyton to not play this game coming up.
Oh, of course.
Now you're talking. Sunday night, prime time, Patriots, Broncos, and he's not going to play?
Right.
Oh.
And we already know he's not going to play. You know, Pro Football Talk, Mike Florio specifically put out a report that said Peyton is already considering playing, and he's telling teammates he's considering playing in 2016. I read a report yesterday that said Peyton was infuriated by the report. which I presume to mean he feels like it's made up out of thin air. I just cannot picture. I'm sure the spirit would be willing. I can't picture Peyton Manning's body allowing him to play another full season. He can't make it through this one. He's not getting any younger, and I don't think that arm is going to get any stronger.
Yeah, I remember a couple years ago saying that he was done. And I'm talking when he was in Indianapolis, and we're like, he got no arm strength anymore. He can't play. And then, like, the very beginning of his tenure in Denver, you know, the balls were floating. He couldn't throw the outs anymore. But then all of a sudden he got it back.
Right.
You know, and I don't know. I mean, the neck, I think, was one of those things where he finally had to get some of the grip strength back and all that. So, I mean, I would have put him out to pasture a couple of years ago, and all he did was have some of the best years that he's ever had.
But
so,
he talked about in the preseason he can't feel the tips of his fingers now because, you know, as a result of the neck issue that he's had. I mean, we're seeing it. We've seen it over time. Historically, it does not end well for these older quarterbacks.
Look, I hope he plays. But if he plays, I hope he plays like, I don't expect him to play like the, you know, in his prime, but I want him to play at a respectful level. You don't ever want to see a guy that's out there that just can't do it.
Right.
Like what we're seeing this year.
Exactly.
You know, for the most part.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, they're in an odd situation because Peyton has all so much knowledge and, you know, smarts and savvy, and he may see and know what the right thing to do on the field is, but his body may not allow him to execute it. You know, and they're 8-2, and they're in position. They want to, you know, they still have Cincinnati coming up. They want to get home field, at least a bye behind the Patriots in the AFC.
One of the most frustrating things is that when you feel like you finally have figured it out, I mean, as far as like when you're playing.
Mentally, yeah.
Mentally, you understand the game, you understand schemes, you understand the objectives and the nuances of the game. And then when you reach that point, all of a sudden your body starts to fail you. And you're like, man, why couldn't I have had some Frankensteinian, you know, transfer of knowledge into my brain when I was 21 or 22, and I had the physical skills and then the knowledge at the same time.
There you go. Frankensteinian, Tony. By the way, Tyler did a little look up for me on Jim Brown. NFL.com, I think, is off. It was on the 19th that Jim Brown ran for 237, one of his four 200-yard games in his career. Who's got the most 200-yard rushing games lifetime in the National Football
League?
In
the NFL?
Yes.
My guess was going to be OJ.
Tony Dorsett?
It would be OJ. I didn't want to spoil it because the People versus OJ Simpson is coming out, and I'm sure that will be highlighted greatly.
How many did he have?
He had 6.
Okay.
Tiki Barber's got 5. So does LaDainian Tomlinson. Then Jim Brown, Earl Campbell, and Barry Sanders have 4 each. And Earl did them all in the 1980 season, by the way. Had all 4 of his. Doug Martin's got 3 now.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's pretty good company.
I had him like, what, 2 weeks ago in fantasy?
Yeah, it's always that way, brother.
And then, right?
You're always a week ahead, a week behind.
I should go Doug Martin again. And then I said, nah.
It didn't score any touchdowns, but 200-plus yards will do you solid, man. No question about it. I would much rather have traded in Devontae Freeman and his concussion this week for Doug Martin or any other number of running backs. All right, we got to take a timeout here. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony here with you. It's Jaguars Today live at EverBank Field on a Tuesday, brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Taking your calls coming up at 641-1010. Also checking again on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. The question of the day today, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, is this: how many games, when you look at the Jags' remaining schedule, do you think they're going to win, and which ones do you think are the most likely victories? San Diego this week at Tennessee, you got Indianapolis and Atlanta back-to-back at home, then on the road with New Orleans and Houston to close out the season. So how many games will the Jags win out of their final 6, and which ones are you predicting victory in? You can jump on board the Jaguars Today Facebook page or tweet us at MD_1010XL. At Logs56, LOGS56, or at 1010XL, Fat Tony. Jaguars Today live at EverBank continues in a moment on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Loggeman, brought to you by Roland Reisch Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, glad you're along with us here on Jaguars Today this Tuesday morning, brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Got some more Horn in the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Jeff, we'll get to the fan feedback spotlight, but, you know, we talk every week about momentum and it carrying over. You know, I talked a little bit with Andre Branch yesterday, and it does seem like the players feel like, you know what, winning can be contagious. You start to expect to win. Do you have that, you know, recollection from your own playing days when even if you've been on a team that started off poorly, 96, and then you start to win some games, and you it changes your mindset, or does it change your mindset?
Well, it changes your mindset, I think, for a couple different ways. One, it kind of the preparation, it makes the preparation throughout the course of the week better. And then also when you get in a game, when something like the way the Jaguars have won the last 2 weeks, there were moments in that game you're like, oh boy, here we go. But I think it gives you a different mindset in reacting to something negative that happens in a game to where it doesn't start to snowball on you. And so to being able to finally overcome, people call it learning to win. I think it's not necessarily learning how to win, as it is learning how to not overreact or to react to certain things that happen in a ball game. And I think that's a real positive thing for this football team. You know, and it's hard sometimes to get it, but once you got it, you got it. You know, and I think this team has got it now, and that's a big deal.
We talked more so last week against Baltimore about how, you know, the team was realizing, you know, when Blake has a stinker, and you can still overcome that, mm-hmm. that whether it's Blake knowing that, whether it's those around him knowing that, that it doesn't all have to be on the quarterback's performance entirely. And he has had two subpar games the last two outings, but they've won them both. So I think the thing that most people look at that frustrates them about Blake's play, there are a lot of positives, but he seems to throw that inexplicable ball or three every game, right?
I mean, or three.
Well, this week it was more the one to Julius Thomas. The week before there were multiple ones.
Yeah, there was a couple of them.
Right, and he got away with a few of them. You're not a quarterback, but what is he? Is his brain kind of turning off in that second? Is he just trying to make a play and he's, you know, has that gunslinger mentality, I'm going to force one in there? What is it, if there is one thing you can point to, why this keeps cropping up?
Yeah, I don't, you know, that's a tough one to answer, because, you know, you're talking about evaluating the mind of a 22-year-old quarterback.
Sure.
Or a 23-year-old quarterback. You know, it's hard.
Well, you get the big bucks.
But, you know, I mean, sooner or later, the experience has to set in, you know, to where he understands, uh-oh, I can't do that. You know, to where it's not, it's there, it's just natural, it's not there. You know, the throw that he made on the interception to Zach Brown, he's escaping up into the pocket, which that was one of those moments where, you know, Johnny Osher was referring to not trusting the protection. He escapes up into the pocket instead of sliding up into the pocket. And so when he escapes up into the pocket, his feet are heading towards the goalpost. Well, as a passer, you want to have the feet going towards the throw. So he literally throws it. It's kind of to the right, but his feet are going straight ahead. And as a quarterback, you've got to understand, look, chances of that being accurate and having velocity in that instance, it's just not going to happen. So he's made some plays to where you sit there and you go, okay, now that we've had, like, what was it, five fourth-quarter interceptions, that you would learn from them. But some guys, it takes a little bit more to learn from, you know, and that's probably that gunslinger mentality.
Are you seeing other examples, though, of him deciding, hey, let me throw this one away? Are there an increasing amount of those examples, even if he hasn't completely eradicated that inexplicable throw?
You remember the sack cause fumble where he kind of paralleled the line of scrimmage, which against the Jets?
Yes.
Okay. And he stepped up into the pocket. And this is what, red zone or fairly close to the red zone, and starts straddling the line of scrimmage to buy time, and he gets the sack cause fumble that happens on him. Well, in this past game against Tennessee, you remember he escaped out of the pocket to the left side, and he's kind of buying time, and he can't see what's behind him, but the clock went off in his head and said, I just got to get rid of this ball. I mean, so that's, I think, progress, you know.
Yeah.
In the Jets game, you know, he just extended the play too much and took a sack and a cause fumble that he shouldn't have. This past week against Tennessee, he has a similar type situation, although the mechanics of it were a little bit different. but the decision was better.
Yeah, I think JP and I were watching the game here. We even remarked at the time, like, that is a good throwaway.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you see signs like that where you're like, all right, you know, he's learned from some of that before. But some of the interceptions that he's having at the fourth quarter and at crunch time, you want to see some of them start to fade away.
All right, got some more on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line at 904-641-1010. This is a long one, so strap in. The Jags claim they needed a, quote, bell cow back the past two seasons, and yet they rarely gave any back 20 carries a game. Denard Robinson deserves touches because he led the team in rushing as well as having back-to-back 100-yard games last year. The beloved Yeldon has yet to accomplish that. This sounds like somebody who's not convinced that Yeldon is the guy. The beloved Yeldon has yet to accomplish that. Has only been given 20-plus carries three of the nine games he started. Toby Gerhardt has never earned a touch, but Denard has to score on two or three touches a game, according to Logman. Olsen has no commitment to the running game, and we've lost close games because of it. I think what he's saying is, before we're talking about when Greg Olsen, if Denard makes a big play, Greg Olsen's going to say, okay, I see the burst coming back, and that's what it is. So I guess that's what them saying he needs to do something on, he's only getting a handful of touches to catch the eye of Greg Olsen. It sounds like.
Yeah, but it's more than that. You know, I mean, the coaches see Denard in practice.
Sure they do.
You know, on a week in and week out basis, you know, and so, you know, fans are assuming that, well, he's only got two touches. How can you expect to see Denard and what he can really do unless all of a sudden you give him the ball more in a game? First and foremost, I mean, that's spoken like a Wolverine, some of those comments.
A little bit, right?
A little bit, yeah. And look, Denard finally showed in a game to me that he warranted more touches. Now, it's probably the most touches that Denard's had since pre-injury. Maybe the reason those touches happened was because the coaches finally saw something in Denard in practice that warranted those seven touches that he had in the ball game.
As far as Yeldon goes and having a commitment to the run and wanting to run a bell cow back, quote-unquote bell cow, 20-plus times, first of all, they're having a lot of success with the passing game. That's one. Secondly, they're not having, you know, they're not leading throughout the second half of a lot of these games, which is where a lot of these guys pile up carries.
Big time.
Right? And so is it more game flow situation that, you know, look, if we're behind, you know, quite often in the NFL, you're going to be throwing the football. I'm not saying you have to stop, you have to abandon the run entirely, but it doesn't seem to me like they're abandoning TJ. It's more like in the flow of the game, it seems like, I don't know, maybe I'm crazy. I don't think Greg Olsen is calling terrible games.
No, it's the one thing about an offensive coordinator. Have you ever met an offensive coordinator that fans just loved?
Yeah, we were talking about that on the break. Mike Martz, right around the turn of the century.
Yeah,
for
but,
a couple
I, but
years.
I guarantee you that there were weeks in which, you know,
it's week.
Why
to week.
Are we not giving the ball to Marshall Faulk?
Right.
Why are we not throwing the ball to Torrey Holt more? Same thing with Norv Turner when he was in Dallas. I'm sure you had weeks where people were like, you know, Emmett should get the ball more.
Emmett needs it 35 times.
Jay Novacek should get the ball more. And I'm like, you got to throw the ball to Michael Irvin. Hey, you got to throw the ball to Alvin Harper. I mean, that's the way it is, you know. And that's just, look, T.J. Yeldon will get the ball more when the game's flow dictates that. But at the same token, you know, this offense has a really good receiving core. And you're crazy not to find a way to feed them the ball. I mean, that's the explosive plays. I mean, they're one of the top teams in the league in explosive plays because of the receiving core and the passing game. Now, one thing I think that needs to happen more often is the explosive runs by TJ, which we're not seeing, and that's a part of TJ. It's a part of the offensive line, and it's a part of the flow of the game, like you're talking about. If you have a lead, all of a sudden teams are starting to play you a little differently, and all of a sudden, bam, all of a sudden you've got a big run, you know. But, you know, the criticism of should it be TJ, should it be Denard and Greg Olsen, you know, it's all part of having an opinion.
By the way, Ted Dickman, Jaguars PR specialist, just tweeted out the fact that you can vote on, which you can every week, vote for the Castrol Edge Clutch Performer of the Week for the NFL, and Rashad Green is nominated as one of the five nominees.
Big time.
You can find that at NFL.com. By the way, I just voted for him, and then I tweeted it out, so you can, if you follow me on Twitter, you can get the direct link there. But it's NFL.com. I don't want to go into the, you're never going to remember the URL, but if you go to NFL.com and just maybe Google Clutch Performers or search Clutch Performers on the site, the nominees are Rashad Green with the punt return, DeQuell Jackson, who had the pick six, and it was all over the field, really, for Indy against Atlanta. Brock Osweiler of the Denver Broncos, Aaron Rodgers of the Green Bay Packers, and Chandler Catanzaro, the kicker of the Arizona Cardinals, who ultimately came through with the game winner on Sunday Night Football. A lot of people would say the refs were clutch on that one. You see the way that one went down?
I did not. I couldn't stay awake.
You had, it was Arizona's driving after, since he had driven to tie the game, I think it was 31-all, Arizona's driving to where they're going to be in long field goal territory, like 47, 48-yard range, and you had what appeared to be a false start with 6 seconds left, and Arizona's out of timeouts, but the refs came in and said D'Amata Pecco was calling out. He was saying, they claim he was saying, set, go, as a defensive lineman trying to, you know, initiate the snap. He was saying, I was just getting my guys lined up to alert them for a running play or something along those lines. Right. And then so ultimately they got a 15-yard, it's an unsportsmanlike 15-yard penalty, and Catanzaro was able to kick, I think, a 32-yard game winner at that point. I don't know if that's the clutchest performance of the week, so hopefully Rashad can at least take down Catanzaro.
That was a big-time play now. I mean, you go back and you look at how the flow of the game was going. You know, the Jaguars offense, they, you know, 0-for-3 in the red zone. You have, you know, I think the longest drive that they had in the second half might have been like 5 plays, something like that, and had a couple 3-and-outs mixed in there. And you just had the opinion that something has to happen for this offense. You know, they got to have a moment by Blake Bortles to where he just shines. And but you weren't feeling very confident that it was going to happen. And Rashad Green makes a beautiful cut, gets a great block. He telestrated it last night and showed it on Jaguars All Access. It's a beautiful run, beautiful blocking, and a great job by a couple guys of not getting a little too aggressive on the blocks because they could have been penalized.
Yeah, was it Sterling that had the chance to block
yes,
the guy in the back?
Neil
and
Sterling
held up?
Had a chance, but he did a really good job of laying off. You know, that was the first game to where I thought special teams had a winning performance overall. You make all your field goals. You have a 63-yard punt return. Your coverage was probably, and I don't know what the exact numbers are. I'm looking at them right now. The punt returns were 5.0 for the Tennessee Titans, which might be the season low for any game. The kick returns for the Tennessee Titans, they only had one for like 22. You had 5 touchbacks by Jason Myers. That was the best special teams performance of the year. They need to keep it going.
I agree with you. You know, it's funny because I could have been more wrong. I said in the pregame that the special teams doesn't need to win the game. They just, their biggest contribution would be don't lose it with some critical mistake. They went out and won the game or significantly contributed to winning the game. And without that punt
first
return,
time of the year.
Right. Absolutely. And without that punt return, I don't think they win the game, quite frankly.
Maybe not.
You know, I just, they've had, I think that was such a spark. They had so much momentum going into that play. I think you had Tennessee's defense on their heels a little bit on that play, and I think it was great, too. They were able to connect on that first down for the touchdown.
You wish you could go back to the Jets game, insert Rashad Green on the muff punt that Nick Marshall had.
Take it back 40 yards.
Just right. just to see
just
what would happen.
Right. No, I hear you. And we talked about that as well, Tony and I did on Friday. You don't know how many games Rashad Green could have affected, you know, with his being out. And, you know, you don't like to make excuses for injuries because everyone deals with them. But it's not an excuse. It's just a reality. No one's saying, oh, poor us. We give us a 6-4 record. But who knows, you know, what it could have impacted.
It would be cool to take Doc, you know, and Back to the Future car and take Rashad Green and say, all right, you're going to return this punt.
Yeah, just for that one, if nothing else. Just
you go
for that
back
one.
And, you make what happened, you know, in reality happened, but just to see what that would have done.
Sure. A couple of others here on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text. I actually got this tweet in from Uncle Chaps who wanted to know, this is an important question for you, Jeff. Please ask Jeff if a cheesecake is a pie or a cake. Where do you come down on that important question?
Well, it's cheesecake.
Yeah, I would think that's an obvious one, right? Who calls a cheesecake a pie?
But
right?
It's built like a pie.
Is it? I don't know. I mean,
It's more the consistency of like a key lime pie, that kind of
that's
thing.
That's fine, but it's a cake.
It's got kind of a pie crust. You don't see that kind of crust.
But it's like the sides go straight up and down. They don't angle in like a pie. To me, a pie's got to have that little angle crust. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Pie-shaped crust.
Well, it's called cheesecake.
Why are we talking about cheesecake on Thanksgiving
week? There's a question that came
we should
in.
We be talking about pecan
maybe people
pie,
like,
cheesecake
right.
pie, and sweet potato pie.
I don't
pie.
Eat any of those pies.
I eat them all.
Chocolate cream pie, I'm your man. All right?
You don't like pecan pie?
No.
That's Tony.
I don't like
say
pecan
that
pie, pecan pie.
Pecan.
I don't like any of them. All right? I definitely don't like pumpkin pie. Pumpkin pie is...
Pumpkin can stay away from
disgusting.
Me, but... Sweet potato
pie,
no apple pie?
Love it.
No apple pie.
Oh, wow. Un-American.
Just don't like the, I don't like cream. The consistency of, like baked apples. You know, they're kind of...
They're what? Delicious.
They're gross feeling. You know, I don't like
I'm
the
have
I don't like
all
the
of
texture.
The above this week.
That's fine.
But I'm not going to have any cheesecake.
All right. I'm not a cheesecake guy either.
I like cheesecake.
Chocolate cream pie, though, however. Coconut cream pie.
How about a Snickers
now
pie?
Now you're talking. Snickers pie, we can all get on board with. Come on. Are you kidding?
Oreo cookies pie.
Yes.
Yeah. No,
all those ice other, cream pie. All those other kind of pies in that those categories as well. Here's a simple one for you. Who's a better wide receiver, Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns? Better young wide receiver. Got this on the text line from the 229 area code.
Allen Robinson is the guy that, you know, if you had a draft, I mean, probably all 32 general managers would take Allen Robinson, you know, out of those two just because of the upside. You know, he's got a little bit more speed. He's got a little bit better vertical. He's a little bit more of a dominant player. But there's a lot of coaches that would love to have Allen Hurns.
Oh, yeah, right. It's not a knock on Allen Hurns to say Allen Robinson, and I agree with you. GMs would take him. Because of the physical attributes and who is better right now, they're both pretty damn proficient.
Both great. I can't wait to see. I mean, and one of the questions, you know, that I have for Gus for pregame is that, you know, how do you manage the wide receiving core? You know, Brian Walters, Rashad Green, Marquise Lee, Allen Hurns, Allen Robinson, and managing snaps and touches, because you know you. Brian Walters, so dependable.
Right.
Rashad Green, you know, kind of in that same category, dependable guy. And then you have your two main guys, the A-team, Allen Hurns, Allen Robinson. But then you have a guy that when he's on the field, he looks special, which is Marquise Lee.
And you obviously invested in him because you felt he could be special.
Yeah, and I mean, part of that is because you invested in him. But also part of it is that when you just see him, he looks different.
Sure.
He looks special. Yeah, and... Two, three years ago, you were thinking about the wide receiver situation and where it was.
Miserable.
It was terrible.
Right. So and that's a good problem to have,
yeah.
Right? If you got to figure out ways to get your highest drafted guy on the field because the other guys are performing well, that's a problem I think you want to have if you're, you know, Jerry Sullivan and Greg Olson in the lot coaching those guys up. All right, let's take a timeout. We'll come back. Fan Feedback Spotlight asks you to run through the schedule for the remaining six games, and we put it out there for you. San Diego at home, at Tennessee, Indianapolis and Atlanta back-to-back at home, and then New Orleans and Houston on the road. How many of those final six will the Jags win, and which ones do you predict victory in for your Jacksonville Jaguars? We'll get to the Fan Feedback Spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships coming up, and we'll also find out what other side dishes Jeff Logman will have on that Thanksgiving Day table coming up in just a couple of days. With Jeff Logman, with Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey on a Tuesday brought to you by Kenny Lay & Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Logman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, we got down to brass tacks here on the break. Some of the important issues cleared up for this week. Dark meat. Not even
all
a question,
the way.
Right? Seriously. Like we all said, you know, white meat's good on a sandwich with your leftovers. On the plate, especially the thighs, wings,
yep.
Drums.
I'm thorough, with you.
All that stuff. Delicious. Number, if you can, what's your favorite side dish that, you know, I mean, mashed potatoes you can have with any meal. What's your favorite Thanksgiving type side dish? Is there one that leaps to mind for you?
Cornbread casserole or cornbread stuffing?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm a gizzards guy, like the turkey gizzards and mm-hmm. liver and the heart. That's the best part of the whole turkey as far as I'm concerned.
How
honestly.
How?
I guess
baked or fried?
Baked. I don't. Yeah.
You ever had him fried?
I've not. I probably had fried. I probably had fried. I don't know if I've fried turkey liver, but like I'll go to a restaurant and I'll order chicken livers. My wife thinks I'm insane, you know, and I love them. I've ate them since I was a kid.
Nothing wrong with that. I'm a fried turkey guy, though.
Are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people are. You know, deep fried turkey.
Oh, but.
And we're talking too.
You keep my brother busy on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's
a firefighter.
And ain't that the truth?
There's
man.
A secret to that, though, you know? I mean, there's a little bit of an art to that.
Yeah, don't be drunk and kick over the fryer.
That's the first step.
That's always been an issue. What about you, Tony? Favorite Thanksgiving side?
Any of the stuffings, honestly.
Any of the multitude of stuffing.
It's my favorite side, right? So I don't care
if you said oyster stuffing?
Yeah, it's great.
See, I'm like, I've never had that.
I haven't either.
It's really good.
Tony, give me the oysters while I'm watching.
What's the difference? Like, the oysters replace like what? What or is it just?
They're just in there. It's got that little bit of oyster flavor in there. It's excellent if you've never had.
Throw them in there. My mom made pork stuffing, and she'd stuff it
too.
In the turkey. It was freaking delicious.
Cornbread stuffing. It's all good. I love the stuff.
Tyler Devitt, favorite Thanksgiving side.
I usually eat an unhealthy amount of mashed potatoes and gravy. It's an original dish, but I love it.
Everybody eats an unhealthy amount. At least I do, man. That's by quantity, that may be the largest thing on my plate.
Yeah. Thanksgiving basically become, like, you have all these individual things that basically become a casserole because you have gravy.
They do all slide into
each
other.
Like, you just put your whole plate together and then you just go to the gravy bowl. And it's like, oh, everything needs a little bit of gravy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I know you're a big fan of rolls.
I love my dinner rolls.
have you had Sister Schubert's yeast rolls?
I have not.
Demps.
I need to, huh?
Demps.
I love a yeast roll now. I'm a
Sister
buffet man.
Sister Schubert's in the frozen.
Sister
Schubert's frozen yeast roll.
At which grocery store do you?
Any of them.
They all have them. Sister Schubert's. I'll be looking for them.
Oh, son.
Yeah. All right.
You'll thank me.
Hopefully everybody out there in the listening audience has a wonderful place to take in their Thanksgiving dinner as well out there, because we're all getting hungry around these parts. All right, let's take a look quickly at the fan feedback spotlight, Tony. How optimistic are Jag fans coming down the stretch here? It's a fun position to be in. You'd rather the team be 8-2 right now, but you'll take what you can get. They've earned wins in 3 out of their last 4 games to get to 4-6. So we asked you how many you think you can win coming down the stretch, and which ones in particular look ripe for the picking.
Here's what we got from Mike. He said 4 more wins: San Diego, Tennessee, Indianapolis, and New Orleans. From Irish Jaguar, 6. 10-6 is real. From Duval Doom, he expects just 2, Tennessee and Indianapolis.
Is Doom being a pessimist, or is he trying to just be a realist?
I don't know. Maybe he's been pessimistic the last month, and it's working.
That could be.
You know,
he's that kind of guy.
I don't know. From Bortles Facts, Blake Bortles will lead the Jaguars to wins in their final 10 games, in the Super Bowl included in that. From John, Tennessee, Houston, he says 3, and then we just got an at N. I'm not sure which one. That Indianapolis, maybe 7-9 for the team. From Daniel, 5-6 beating San Diego, Tennessee, Indianapolis, New Orleans, and the Texans. Hashtag go big or go home. From Chris, 4, San Diego, Tennessee, Indianapolis, and Houston. So all 3 division games in there. All of them, why not, right? Says John, 10-6. Hashtag I can always dream. From Eric, wins against San Diego, Tennessee, Indianapolis, and Houston. Losses to Atlanta and New Orleans, 4-2, and contend for the division. If they win all 3 division games, plus one more, I think that may be enough to win this division right now. From Alvaro, Tennessee, Indianapolis, and Houston, they need to win 4 more games to start setting standards. San Diego, Indianapolis, Tennessee, and the Texans. From Stoff, we can win all of them, but Phillip Rivers and Antonio Gates scare me to death. And from Black Dog, win the 3 at home and shock the Saints. How bad is San Diego? So bad the Titans think they suck. Hashtag, are you kidding me? So, a lot of optimism.
I don't know if it would shock the Saints. The Saints haven't decided to play any defense at all this year, although they did get rid of Rob Ryan. Sometimes you get that immediate, let's play harder for the new guy impact, Jeff.
Kind of like the Dan Campbell
effect. Exactly. Right. It lasted for a couple games in Miami and seems to have tapered off now. Mike Mularkey's first game in all went well. Yeah. Right. I mean, sometimes it happens.
How
like
about
that.
Mike Mularkey at the end of that ball game, though?
In terms of trying to just run the clock with 6 minutes left?
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
It brought back really bad memories.
I mean, you've got a young quarterback that's capable, one of the better receiving tight ends in the league, and Delaney Delanie Walker.
Who had been hurting the Jags all night.
Your quarterback is efficient. He rarely throws interceptions. He's safe with the ball. And you totally take the air out of the ball for the game. I mean,
it was obviously somewhat maybe didn't trust his own guys, but I got to believe he just looked and said, I don't think the Jags can drive it the length of the field, right? Well, they didn't have to.
But see, here's the thing. If you watch the Jaguars on film and you get a little background on them, you know that Blake Bortles is at his best when it comes down to the end of the halves.
Right.
And do you really want to risk having
take
that happen?
Take a chance on that, right?
Yeah.
No, I hear you, man. We're glad he did. We're absolutely glad he did. I think it's interesting because I'm looking at the Facebook responses to this. And while one or two people say, hey, we're probably only going to go 2-4 down the stretch. Honestly, now, you know, interesting audience we've got because they're we assume they're Jaguar fans. And the people who respond may be more rabid fans and therefore maybe, you know, more bullish or whatever on the team. But 4-2 seems to be like the minimum of what people think this team is capable of pulling off. And it's just funny because, Jeff, you look at the Ravens game, right? If the false start, if a false start is called and the Jags don't get the kickoff, it's not like they played any differently, right? It would come down to one call that was or wasn't made. They played exactly the same way, right? If any number of circumstances happen, if instead of sacking Mariota on the final play, he gets off a lucky pass that falls in, bounces, falls into the arms of Delanie Walker, it's one play different, yet you've lost now you're 2-8 instead of 4-6, and it's just what winning can do to the psyche of the team and to the fan base is pretty remarkable, because I guarantee you, Tony, there was no point prior to this right now that we could have looked back and said, how do you think the Jags are going to close the season? 4-2, 5-1, or 6-0?
Right.
And they would have been like, what are you smoking? Maybe 1-5.
Sure.
Right. So, you know, a little victory brings a little positivity and optimism.
A little perception change.
No doubt.
You know, but I will say this, that, you know, we've been kind of saying all year long is that, you know, this team is getting better. It's getting better. And, you know, I believe that, and you could see it. But sooner or later, for some of the fans to see that, they have to see the W.
It's got
to
pay off.
And I totally understand that. And I think the biggest thing that has been the most surprising thing is that while we were saying they're getting better, is that the defense was just kind of just status quo. And lately, the defense has taken another step up. And I think that that's been key. I think the secondary is playing better. I think they're playing better up front. And that's something that I don't know if you necessarily expected. You know, so that's a positive. And here we are, you know, with great perception, this team could win 4 out of their last 6 games. And we're saying that with an offense that's not functioning at the level it's capable of. It's all good stuff. It's about, you know, so it's all, it makes you feel good about where they are and where they're going.
So if the Jags were to win, let's say go 4-2 down the stretch, that would make them what, 7-4 in their final 11, right?
Yep,
that'd be a pretty solid way
great.
To finish.
That'd be great.
And then who knows? I don't know if 8-8. I personally don't think 8-8 is going to get it done. I think somebody's going to win 9, be it the Jags themselves or some other team in the AFC South.
My prediction at the beginning of the year was 7 wins.
Yeah, for the Jags.
That's right.
Right. So they're on track to get in that ballpark. They need to go 500 the rest of the way.
Yep.
We'll see if they're able to do it. Logs for you. I know with Thanksgiving coming up, I assume the Gus Bradley show maybe
Thursday is off.
So are you doing it Wednesday or are you
no.
taking it off this week?
We're taking it off. It's not going to be happening this week. So no radio programming by the Jaguars on Thursday night. The outdoor show will be manned by Kevin Favor himself this weekend.
Gotcha.
Me and Kirk are doing outdoor show research.
Yeah, I bet you are. In some
yes,
kind of blind of some sort.
Film Room Friday will be on the website.
Okay.
That will be up on Friday, and then pregame show, Channel 4, television, and then, of course, the game broadcast.
Which pregame show has basically now become, let's tune in to see who Logman picks in fantasy each week, because we got to know who.
How did I do this week, by the way?
I honestly, you ask me this every Tuesday. I never tallied up until Sunday, trying to think who you
had. Yeah, just tell me who I had.
Let me see who we got here.
And I want to know who you had.
Yeah,
because me and you are neck and
I had Carson Palmer, which was
that
great for me. You had Bortles, so I got a big edge there. You had AP. You didn't do a ton this week, but he did more than Devontae Freeman, who left with a concussion.
Right.
So you get a little edge there. Then you had Allen Robinson. I had Fitzgerald.
What did Fitzgerald do?
About the same, about 8 for like 90, something like that.
A-Rob
something
had 100 ballpark, some, but 100 no touchdowns. 5.
The wide receivers are pretty close. It depends on how much Palmer beat Bortles by. I might have snuck a few points on you this week. Don't know if either one of us won the week, but that's where we stand heading into week 12.
It's all about me and you.
Well, are you kidding me? Everybody else, man.
I mean, we've got a big lead on them.
You
guys.
Got a big, fat rearview mirror. You're going to need it to see Frangie and company, all right? That's where they stand right now, me and you.
And by the way, does Baselli know anything about football?
Baselli does not know much. He doesn't, but we definitely know he doesn't know who's playing
in
any given week. Oh, yeah, he's last. He's behind JP.
Oh.
He's been that way for a few weeks now.
Oh.
So we'll see. Those guys can battle it out on the back end. Jeff, happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. All right, there you go, buddy.
And to Tony, you too, bro.
You too, Jeff.
We appreciate all of you tuning in today. Thanks to Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com, our Tuesday sponsor. Back with our final edition of Jaguars Today tomorrow from 10 until noon. For Fat Tony, for Jeff Loggeman, for Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey signing off. XL Primetime coming up next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Ric Flair.